Welcome back. We're ready to get started with our Commercial Space Transportation Advisory Committee portion. I'll start off by introducing Mike Gold. Mike Gold is the current Comstock Chair. He also serves as Bigelow Aerospace's Director of DC Operations and Business Growth. Mr. Gold is responsible for a broad array of activities at Bigelow Aerospace, including international business development, export control, media, corporate and federal relations, as well as NASA Space Act Agreement implementation, patent report maintenance, and general strategic planning. Before joining Bigelow Aerospace in a full-time capacity, Mr. Gold was an attorney with Patton Boggs LLP with a specialty in advanced aerospace ventures. Mr. Gold is a member of the District of Columbia and New York State Bar Associations. He graduated from the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Mike, please take over.
Thank you, George. Appreciate it. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to your fun-sized Comstock panel. We're going to get you in and out in a half hour or less, or your pizza's free. So, given the paucity of time we have here, if you'll forgive me, I am just going to get to it and actually proceed with shortened introductions for once. We have representatives from three of our four working groups, and let me begin at the end of the table with Russ McMurray. Russ is the principal senior counsel of the Boeing Law Department. He is the only man who makes me actually like lawyers. Russ is almost makes me proud of being attorney, despite the fact that he is a Yankee fan. We know him. We love him. He's our vice chair of the business legal work working group. Let's have a round of applause for Russ McMurray, everyone. And Russ, and what we're going to do, by the way, today is just describe a little bit for each working group, kind of what the issues are that we see moving forward into 2014. And if anyone wants to make any general comments as well as to the Comstock, that's what we're going to do for each of the folks. So I'll turn it over to Russ.
Well, thanks, Mike. I mean, just as far as the business legal working group is concerned, currently, we have three different issues on the table, and what I'd like to do is just go through each one of those with the group, give you a little, a few highlights of them, familiarize you with them, and you know we can work on those throughout the year, and I'm sure we'll be formulating new ones as we go along. But current status is what's most important at this juncture. So the first issue that we have that we've been discussing and working on relates to the legal and regulatory regime that will be established eventually for the mining of celestial bodies. You know, right now there is a bare bones skeletal form of existing law concerning celestial bodies. There's an outer space treaty. There are more treaties concerning this, but though there's not really a whole lot of definitive law or rule out there about who may harvest, who may claim these celestial bodies. Of course, you have terrestrial nations that are going outside of the scope of the Earth to either claim territory or harvest resources. And so we need to start looking into a regime of rules that would govern that kind of conduct and that kind of economic development out into the future. Secondly, in order to facilitate the entry into the industry, in order to enhance market entry by other participants, and in order to provide some kind of viable business case for industry, the transportation of people carries with it a certain obligation to protect those people from harm. And if we don't do that, of course, there's the likelihood of a bodily injury suit by that spaceflight participant. And so in the beginning of this industry, as was the beginning of aviation, the folks who will be able to avail themselves of this transportation are high net worth individuals. And I don't know how many of you are historians of the aviation industry. I won't pretend to be, But I imagine that at one point in time in the aviation industry, only the rich could afford to fly across the Atlantic. Everybody else, you know, road stewage on ships like the Titanic, right? You remember that? Those are the kind of seats I get on my vacation cruises. But anyway, moving along from that, you know, it was much cheaper to go by sea, but rich folks could go by air. And so now we have the same sort of issue with space transportation. Now, at this juncture, it's expensive to have a space ride, whether it's, you know, on the Lynx as a suborbital flight or whether or not it's a trip to the ISS. It's going to be very expensive. And so the plaintiffs are going to be worth a lot of money, have a lot of earning potential. And so there's a lot of risk to the operators, the suppliers, the manufacturers, and the whole supply chain from a liability perspective. So we're working on a construct to try to implement legislation to protect those in the industry from excessive liability. Now, what Comstock has recommended so far is the concept of including those individuals in the third-party definition for CSLA indemnification. That may not be the way to go. I don't know that we won't discuss changing that a little bit to something more akin to the aviation industry where there's a cap on liability rather than absorption of that risk by the taxpayer. Perhaps that's not appropriate, especially when we're dealing with high net worth individuals. But we'll be looking at that further throughout the year. And then the third issue is similar but a little bit different. It has been of great benefit to the launch industry to enjoy CSLA indemnification. So for licensed activities by the FAA, as most of you know, there is a level of indemnification that is provided over and above the MPL insurance that must be procured in order for FAA to grant a license to launch. And, you know, recently, a lot of talk, but there was a three-year extension of CSLA. We'd like to see the next round be even longer term or permanent. So we'll be discussing that as well, because that's something that really needs to be in place for the domestic industry to be viable as a competitor against the foreigners in the future. Because I don't know how many of you had an opportunity to read it. There was a GAO study done, you know, over the summer of this year that found that in the indemnification regime of other nations is superior to ours, and risk is money. So if the governments accept more risk, the operators are going to be, you know, able to operate on a thinner financial margin and be competitive. So that's the recap, Mike, of the three things we're working on.
Thank you so much, Russ. And again, as the attorneys here on the panel, I can assure you, just to hit on some of his points, we got high net worth individuals creating companies, flying other high net worth individuals. We might as well have a giant target painted on our back for the attorneys. And if this industry is not proactive in setting up legal defenses for liability, we're going to spend more time in court than we'll spend in space. So it's a great point, and we're really looking forward to business legal going in that direction. And thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Mike.
Moving on to Janet Karika, a retired Air Force officer with 33 years of experience. She's currently the Jacobs Executive Director for Interagency Launch, our new chair of the Operations Working Group, and the only other member of this panel to own a Star Trek uniform besides me. So, folks, let's have a big warm round of applause for Janet Karika.
Thanks, Mike. What I wanted to start with was just a quick overview of some of the things that I found out when I started working on Comstock. For those of you that aren't completely familiar with it, Comstock does only those tasks assigned by the FAA, but they're also charged with info gathering to address FAA issues. They evaluate commercial space transportation developments and exchange ideas about FAA regulations and rulemaking that could require changes, and we advise George and this group about those things. And it's about 25 members, four working groups, as Mike said. And I say that because as the operations working group chair, we're going to be looking for ideas from industry and from our colleagues on things that would be useful to address, that would help inform the FAA. So that you know their charter a little bit, This will give you some ideas on kind of where our lanes are. For the operations working group, we are going to continue with some of the issues that we have been doing for the past couple years, but we're also going to start moving in a couple new directions. For example, we're going to continue being informed by the Air Force on their capabilities-based assessment. This is their, again, reevaluation again of the range and the capabilities there. And they briefed a little while ago, and so I will have them come and brief the working group again about where they're at with this latest round of renovating things at the range. They also have a Title 10 item that they're working called the Commercial Space Launch Cooperation. It's part of Title 10. It was in the latest NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. And this is to allow non-governmental entities to contribute money to the range or even resources so that they could expand the capability. Rather than just doing it on the margins, they're trying to get away so that if you want to improve the ranges for your benefit as someone who may come there, you can do so. I am very curious to hear how this would actually work and what sort of guarantees that the money would be used for the proper purposes. So we will have them come and brief again probably in our May meeting for how that's coming. And I think where it's at within the rulemaking and how they're coming with negotiating that with OSD. We have transferred our ISO work on the International Organization for Standards, that liaison, to Mark Sundahl in the International Policy Working Group. It's a good fit for him. He's very familiar with it. And we'll be keeping apprised of that area and probably attending his working groups as well to see how that's going, which is an international organization, a consensus-based organization for doing international standards. In the May meeting, I'd like to see if we could maybe get the FCC to come and brief. They've been expanding their role in a number of interesting areas, and so I think that we would like to hear the FCC's view on their roles and responsibilities. And then there's a new database that the FAA is working on, and we're sort of looking through it and seeing what inputs we can provide. It's outstanding. I've played with it. It's really great. So hopefully we'll be working that in my working group and having some of our Comstack members come and try it out. And then finally, the thing that I want to do moving into the future with the team is to look at redoing some of the studies that have been done on the economic impacts and benefits of commercial space transportation to regions. So we're going to kind of look at these studies that have been done up to now and kind of come up with maybe some guidelines or some recommendations on if you wanted to have a spaceport in your state, what are things that really draw people and what are things that repel people about the way you could possibly do this? And then also, if a company is now starting to look for where they want, what spaceport do they want to pick? Because we have spaceports to pick from, which is a great thing. You know, what things should you look at are really great, and what things should you be aware of so that you could pick an area that really would benefit your type of commercial spaceflight? As Oscar continues to remind me, it's not just vertical. I'm an old rocket guy. It's horizontal, too. So different spaceports for different things. So those are some of the things that we're looking at in 2014 and beyond for the Ops Working Group.
Thank you so much, Janet. We appreciate it. And, you know, part of the reason that Michael and I couldn't be here for yesterday afternoon was Janet is so proactive. We were already meeting with her and Ray. And, again, we really appreciate all the hard work she's already putting into the working group. Moving on to Livingston Holder, former Air Force captain, former astronaut candidate, former chair of the Comstack. But perhaps most important of all, a dedicated Seattle Seahawks fan. Let's show Livingston some love for his Hawks. So Livingston is the chair currently of our Systems Working Group, been doing a knockout job there. For just was a couple of words about the Systems Working Group, Livingston.
Thank you. And I've been sending a lot of my emails with my name and a little Go Hawks and a little Seahawk logo. And a buddy of mine from San Francisco said, you know, you guys are done. It's over. And I'm not sure if you're just trying to rub it in or you're waiting for next year. I said, we haven't even had our parade yet. We did it yesterday. I said, give me a week to celebrate, just a week. And he said, okay, I'll give you a week. But yeah, we're very happy in Seattle about that. It was actually a spectacular trouncing, and I didn't feel bad about it one bit. My wife said, you know, maybe they should at least get a single touchdown. I said, I don't have to. And when they got one, I said, okay, they got one. So I was cool with that. Let me give you a quick definition, the formal definition of the systems working group. The systems working group identifies and analyzes key safety, technical, policy, and regulatory issues concerning the range of hardware and software involved with commercial space transportation. This includes expendable and reusable launch vehicles. That's the official boundary conditions, if you will, for what our working group does. In my mind, one of the most important things we can do is bring technical issues into the conversation with the potential regulatory environment from the FAA and other users, so that conversation informs the actions that that the FAA takes next. And as we heard earlier, you want to have lots of conversations early in the process, and I view the systems working group as one of the places where those technical conversations can happen early. One of the biggest challenges in the future that I see is that the commercial space transportation world is very, very, very varied. It's you're going to have vehicles that take off horizontally. You're going to have vehicles that take off vertically. The range of what we're going to design, what's being designed in the future, is extraordinarily broad. And trying to create a regulation for a vehicle that you don't understand is probably unwise. So it's important to increase that understanding. And so one of my objectives is to try and draw the technical community that is envisioning commercial space transportation into the systems working group to communicate about what it is they're planning, how they're planning to do it, so that the regulatory environment is informed well ahead of any significant action taking place, so that if in the future a regulation is indeed required, it's done with a basis of some knowledge. One of the biggest challenges we have is that we have a huge regulatory entity and we have no experience. You know, well, we try and draw analogies from aircraft experience and say, does this apply to your vehicle because it has wings? We try to draw from space lift or vertical launch and say, does this apply to your vehicle? And we're finding that many of these systems are hybrid designs. And so while some elements apply, others absolutely do not. And so trying to find the right mix in a regulatory environment is extraordinarily challenging. So one of the things we've been doing over the last year or so is we've been concentrating on what are the established practices for spaceflight. And AST has created a document called the Draft Established Practices for Human Spaceflight Occupant Safety. Now, what that allows us to do is put together, here's what we believe we know. And we talk about that in our working group sessions, and many of them happen over the phone between our major meetings. And we get inputs from different stakeholders. You know, some of the new companies that are planning commercial space flight, some of the companies that wish in the future to have commercial space flight, and some people who are just interested in the realm chime in. And so what happens is the FAA gets to hear the comments to it, how it's structured, and we say, well, you know, this is how an FAR is built, a Federal Aviation Regulation is built for this part of that. Does that make sense? And we look at that and we go, here's my opinion on that. If you did it like the FAR, then this would be the consequence of it. So the FAA is informed, and sometime in the future there will be a regulatory body that will have to adhere to. But we try our best to provide as much information to the regulating environment as early as possible, so that as they do their job, they're as informed as we can be by the industry. So two things. I want to encourage those of you who are in the commercial spaceflight industry to interact and work with us on ComStack, and therefore work with the FAA on helping them understand what it is you do. When you put in a request for a license, for an activity that you're going to do, a vehicle, a spaceport, et cetera, they get information through that process. But well ahead of that, you have the opportunity to interact with the systems working group, and in some cases the other working groups, to provide that information to the FAA well ahead of maybe your first true large financial step, because you could find that you're going down a path that we have some information on that has proven to be problematic. So you may find good information there. More importantly, we may find that you're doing something that when we inform the FAA, it provides them a guidepost for how, if in the future, when regulations do happen, and I believe they will eventually, how those regulations should be built. So the more information we provide the FAA early, the better the regulatory environment will be, because once it's in place, like most regulations, they will be very, very difficult to change. And since we have very little data, true data on commercial spaceflight, at least human commercial spaceflight to go on, then it's a really, really, really tough thing. So that's probably the largest focus we have at this time. We're going to be inviting folks that government entities like DARPA. They've got the new XS1 program, and part of the thing they've written in the program is that they want it to have a commercial value proposition. So we want to understand that. So we're going to try and get government entities that believe they're doing something with one program that will have value to the Department of Defense, but also has commercial value. When you cross over to that commercial value, we want to understand that. So we're going to invite those folks in to talk to us over time. And I think that's probably the number one thing. Talk to us soon so that, it's kind of like self-defense. You really want to make sure that if there's something you're concerned about, you bring it up. So we as an advisory committee can let the FAA know these are the concerns, and here are recommendations for what we believe you, the FAA, should do or consider.
Thank you so much, Livingston. You know, this regulatory issue, established practices, not just one of the most important things that the Comstock will deal with, but one of the most important things that the industry is dealing with. And we are all extremely grateful to have someone with Livingston's background and capabilities to lead the charge on this.
I now know, I'm wondering what it is you want.
Oh, we'll talk after. So, moving on to our vice chair, Michael Lopez Legria. The joke with Mike and I when they introduce us is, here's Michael Lopez Legria, a man who spent more time in space than nearly any other American. And here's our chair, Mike Gold, who's watched more Star Trek than nearly any other American. So, let me tell you, George Clooney plays Mike in the movies. He's president of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation, our vice chair. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Lopez Legria.
For this, if you haven't noticed, he's a hard man in whose shadow to not stick out because he's so subdued and quiet. I am joined up here by the three of the four working group chairs, and I just want to mention the fourth. Mike may have mentioned, the fourth working group used to be called the Export Control Reform Working Group, now called the International Space Policy Working Group. Chaired by Mark Sundahl from Cleveland State University. He couldn't be here, obviously, and we'll be generating a new charter for that group. As you know, the export control piece of what Comstock has done sort of transitions into more implementation. So that said, I just want a quick observation about the Comstock. First of all, there are a few Comstock members in the audience. Please raise your hand. A very few. So I think Janet said there were 16 to 20, 24 of us. And we really, as I'm speaking a little bit to industry here, but we really try to represent your interests, but also the government, other stakeholders' interests to the FAA Office of Commercial Space Transportation. And although you didn't elect us, so we're not a representative democracy, we're more like a representative dictatorship. But we are the conduit to help you express your opinions to AST, and I think it's very important. Russ and some of the others have mentioned some of the things that we're working on. A lot of these things are CSLA items of interest that will be reauthorized this year, we hope. Each of the working groups has obviously a very specific focus. But none of us, even though we come from companies or organizations, we are on the Comstock as individuals. So Russ's badge doesn't say Boeing, although if you were here at the panel yesterday, I think you may remember him saying, if it ain't Boeing, I ain't going. But we really are, we try to be objective representatives of the industry and the stakeholders at large. So I guess my plea to you is to try to seek us out, participate in the open meetings, which are twice a year right now in May and October, subject to maybe some changes upcoming, but they'll still be twice a year, and help us inform AST so they can help make this relationship between the regulator in the industry, which I think is fairly unusual in terms of its benevolence, continue to strengthen that bond and to make the ultimate regulations, which I think if we're fortunate enough to have as much business as, let's say, the commercial airline industry, I don't think anybody thinks we can do that without having some kind of regulation. So let's figure out what the right path forward to get to that end is. And the way we can do that is by hearing from you so we can pass that on in our observations, findings, and recommendations. That's it.
All great points. Thank you, Michael. Not only is he a Red Sox fan, but he's almost getting us back on schedule. So really appreciate that. As Mike did mention, Mark Sundahl, who is the chair of our International Space Policy Working Group, couldn't be here. So I was just going to say a quick couple of words on his behalf, particularly on the export control issue. Either this spring or summer, we will see the new regulations on Category 15, which is the space category on export control reform. I have had some insight into this process and can assure you that there are really some terrific things going on. And the work product that we're looking at now is much improved from where we were last year. I think relative to the passenger experience, which is particularly important for any number of companies in the Comstock and in the industry as a whole, we've made some incredible progress there. That when Bigelow Aerospace filed its commodity jurisdiction request in 2007 and received relief so that we can fly Japanese, Canadian, Mexican, European passengers without going through the export control process, that was a huge step, because without that, our business cases would be problematic. That began as something that only Bigelow Aerospace had. The relief was extended to Virgin Galactic. And when this new export control reform material passes, it will become the industry standard. And I think that the interagency group has done a great job of keeping the spirit and even the letter of the commodity jurisdiction request relief and expanding it out to everyone. So I'm very excited about that. Where there are areas of concern, though, I'm still choking a bit on the fact that we're treating human rating as a metric for export control. And you heard me discuss this a little bit at the Comstock back in December, but you might as well use color or whether something's polka dots or not is as relevant to export control status as human rating. Many of you may be familiar with missiles. Those are very dangerous, but they're not human rated. It makes no sense to use human rating to decide what category something should be or shouldn't be in, and that's something that I think we need to work on moving forward. I also think that we need to recognize that this should be the beginning, not the ending, of the export control reform process. That now that we removed the legislative prohibition of transferring aerospace hardware from the United States munitions list to the Commerce Control list, we don't have to end here, and we shouldn't end here. Technology is inherently organic, particularly in our field that's moving so quickly. So while we have relief, for example, for the passenger experience, next we need to look at the hardware and move forward. So just a couple of comments there on the export control world. We can now have maybe just one or two questions from the audience, if anyone has questions from the press or media for our panelists. Anybody? Jeff Faust from spacepolitics.com, spacetoday.net, Futron. And what am I missing there, Jeff?
Red Sox fan.
There you go. Most important of all.
You weren't going to take my question if I didn't say that. one other topic that came up during the December Comstock meeting was the effort in the House right now regarding the reforming the termination liability provisions at NASA for at least some programs. I'm wondering if you had an update on anything that's changed since the December meeting.
Well, I don't know about an update, but I can certainly share my views on the topic. And I don't know if Mike or us or anyone would want to chime in after that. I think that there's common ground out there. And as some of you may recall, I actually tried to raise this issue during the May meeting of the Comstock last year. I think that termination liability reform makes sense, not just for the programs of record with SLS and Orion, but for all of our projects. While the Bigelow Expandable Activity Module, the BEAM, may be a relatively small initiative, we got hit by termination liability costs. So certainly from my personal perspective, I believe that universal termination liability reform is something that could make sense for both large and small projects at NASA to make sure that we're using our money wisely. I think where we run into problems is when we try to create a caste system or differentiate one program from another. That's where I think it may be a road too far and creates division. I'm more interested in finding common interests and how we can move forward together.
So I'd like to chime in and just add to what Mike said, and I agree with it. We are all dealing with a very austere NASA budget, and it's imperative that we enable the agency to get the most bang for its buck. And requiring the agency to have its contractors hold a great percentage of the money obligated on the contract for a termination liability contingency that's probably in the single-digit percentages just doesn't make sense. It's analogous to a bank reserving the money of every depositor at once. The chance that the four named programs in the bill and commercial crew are going to get canceled at once are almost zero. So it really would enable the agency to expend more of its funds and make more progress if we had this reform passed in some form. And as Mike noted, there's a division perhaps over which programs that should apply to. Arguably, it should apply to all, because there's a lot of money there that's just sitting. Thanks.
We have to get back on schedule, so maybe this will be the last question, sir.
Yeah, Mike, Rand Simberg. Not just for the reason you said, but would the Comstock consider taking up the task of purging the meaningless phrase, human rating, from this industry?
Boy, I'd certainly like to see that. Any comments from...
Sounds like a good job for the lawyers.
Yeah. So I work with engineers, Rand, and it's hard to eliminate certain terms from their vernacular, even though I try, especially when they're being deposed. but the vernacular and human rating and what that means, that to me is a specifically unique NASA term that reflects requirements that have been formulated by NASA for NASA programs as NASA customer.
No NASA program has ever met.
Shuttle, I'm sorry?
Shuttle was not human rated. No NASA program has ever met those requirements.
I understand, and there's been waivers from that, that go on. I think what's important for this group to focus on from a commercial standpoint is we have to realize that when we talk about human rating, we're talking about requirements, and we're talking about NASA. And when we talk about regulation of the commercial industry, we're not talking about imposition of requirements. We're talking really about regulatory rules. And I think that there's a lot of confusion in industry that the FAA, if it regulates crew safety, which I believe it should, is going to impose these kinds of requirements on everyone in the industry. And that's not true, because this is a regulatory agency, not an agency that dictates requirements. So I don't know, to go back to your direct question, Rand, I don't know how to get rid of that term human rating requirements, within NASA. I think that's a difficult construct. I think we'll be with us, and I think there'll be waivers to it for a long, long time. But if you have any ideas on that, I'll be here.
I appreciate the questions. And I think while we can debate terms like human rating, one thing that is unquestionable is safety is job one for commercial space. And we are very grateful to have a partner in that with George Neild and the FAA. And no one should ever think, imply, or leave this conference believing that safety isn't a priority. We're honored to have many folks who participate in human spaceflight under NASA, and we're grateful to bring that knowledge, that experience, into the commercial space world so we can not only be equal to what went before, but be more safe than what went before. That's our goal. So with that, let's have a round of applause for all of our participants. And I'll turn things back over to George Zampka. Thank you, George.